Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. I would love to thank you all for joining us. And today is the 100th episode of Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser, and I am so honored to share this episode with the part two of our senior writers who have come from Dr. Edith Rock's writing workshop for seniors that is sponsored by the Center of Black Literature at Medgar Evers College in CUNY. So those are our guests tonight. We're going to get to them, but of course, and the board is piling up now, so those of you who are hesitating, who might want to call in and have a question, please do. Please get on the board now, because last week, the most wonderful thing happened for some of you. You were on the board listening, but there were those who had some questions. They could not get to the board because they hadn't called in early enough. So it's piling up now, and I can't control it. So call on in, get on the board, and in the meantime, I'm going to do a little housekeeping, and that will help you all, and okay? All righty. So you are listening now to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. You're on blogtalkradio.com/ S is in Sam, F is in Fred, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, and the number 2. If you are lucky enough to be on the board tonight, you have dialed in to 516-453-6063, and you can also use that number to access the archives that we have. There are now will be 100 episodes that you can choose from. I am so very happy that you all have allowed me to do this 100 times. And I thank you all so very much for tuning in and being supportive all these 2 years. Thank you, thank you, thank you again. The other thing that I want to say to people is that there are only about 3 more episodes left, and then we're going to take a little bit of our summer break like we normally do. And I really do want you to understand that I don't want to interfere into all your summer plans. So we'll resume at the end of August, the beginning of September, maybe a little after Labor Day, and we'll have a lovely season right on into the holidays. So with that all said, I have my 2 guests that I had last week, and I want to reintroduce them just a little bit, because if you were not privileged to be on the call last week, you should know that this week they have come in with some of their work to read with for us and for us to discuss it, and hopefully we will have some questions about the work and how it started. So first, I'm going to start with Sylvia Jones, and I think I should say one thing about Ms. Jones. Ms. Jones, I have known now, I think, for about 7-8 years. I didn't say that last week, and I really wanted you all to know because her wonderful nephew, Franz Jones, is my associate director in the nonprofit that I'm artistic director of. And I have had the privilege of really viewing this program on YouTube with these senior writers as they read their own stories. And I am telling you, it is a wonderful, wonderful experience. And if you get the opportunity, they have some of the episodes on YouTube. You should then find them and listen to the stories. And let me just say that along with that, I'd like to give a little bit of the background for Ms. Sylvia Jones. And she has she's a member of the 1950 graduating class of Dunbar High School, and she attended the Morgan State University, where she has a Bachelor of Science degree, and then she pursued her graduate studies at Fordham University. Her vocation was a therapeutic recreational director for health and hospital coordination in New York City. So we are now speaking about a woman who has had a lovely career, long-standing, retired, and then got involved in this program when she spoke about it last week, talked about Dr. Rock and how she initiated the program and how she was in it from the very beginning. So before I say anything else, I'd like you to say good evening to your audience. Sylvia Jones, please.
Well, good evening. I'm so happy to be back here again with you, and thank you, Lenny, for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I cannot wait to be, you know, to be an audience member in a few minutes as you all share all the wonderful things that, you know, some more of your experiences. Great, great reaction that we had last week from people who could not wait to come back to listen to what your stories are. Now, I am going to talk about my next guest. My next guest is William Craig. And William Craig, born and raised and bred in Brooklyn, he is of lineage of Caribbean and American. He is a proud father, a proud husband, a friend, a cousin, a really, really great, I think, member of this group. He talks about really following his desires when he found out that his voice was as important as others. And that was such an incredible thing that we talked about last week. He said, "It hit me that my words and thoughts were as valuable as those of anyone else. And so therefore, that's why I want to say to you, William Craig, hello, hello, and say hello to the audience."
Thank you, Lenny, for having me again this week. I was looking forward to it, excited about bringing forth a thought of mine that occurred maybe a couple of years back. And I just hope that the audience appreciates your time and what you've done. And congratulations on the 100th session that you brought forward. Again, looking
thank
forward.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, one of the things that I want to do before we get into the pieces with both of you is I really do want to ask of you the thought process that you use. I think it's important that the audience understands, and you set it up a little bit, why you chose the piece that you are choosing to read to us. This is a piece, you know, if you could give us a bit of background of when you wrote the piece and why you decided this piece, and set it up a little bit for us. So because we're just reading a shorter excerpt of it, and then give us an opportunity to ask some questions. And I'm hoping that there is a place where they can read your story in its entirety. Yeah. So I'm going to start with you, Ms. Sylvia. I want you to tell me about your piece, why you chose to present it today, and when all of that happened. So,
okay, this is from our newest publication, Tales of Our Times, an anthology, and it's our fifth volume, and this was done during the years of the pandemic, the year 2020, looking back for healing, looking forward with hope. And this is was a sort of an assignment. We had talked about, you know, what we would write about. And one of the things that came up within the group was, what would you say to America if you were writing a letter? You know, there were many things that went on during the pandemic. We had the uprising at the Capitol. We've had so many things, George Floyd. There were so many things going on, and the election. And so what I had chosen was a greeting to America, which is a very short piece, and it's short. And so that's why I decided that I would do it today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, well, then are we going to hear it in its entirety since it's short?
Yes, you're going to hear it because it's an extremely short piece. Uh-huh.
Okay, good. So you don't have to set anything up. Okay, great. So you go right ahead. I'm sitting here, an audience member myself. I'm very excited. So please.
Okay, let me put my glasses on
and
get started. Greetings, America, by Sylvia Jones Suesken. Dear America, when do we live up to the great democracy that we swear by? And our sacred national anthem that we hold so dear ends with the very moving lyrics, "The land of the free and the home of the brave." How brave is it when Black Americans, since Reconstruction in 1867, have been in a constant uphill battle to prevent voter suppression? During the 1960s, voting rights laws were passed. Many bled and died in the streets, and I must say people of all races, for these rights. But now again, the laws have been watered down, and again the fight continues in the year 2020. Voting gives us the freedom to choose who we wish to make our laws. The poem written by Emma Lazarus, engraved on a tablet in the iconic Statue of Liberty, invites the poor, huddled masses who yearn to be free to come to our shores here in the United States as a gateway of hopes and dreams of a new life. Do these words hold true for Black Americans today? True freedom allows every person to achieve the American dream, regardless of skin tone. We, as Black Americans, have worked hard to help build our country, fought in every war here in America, and have paid taxes. When do we, the people as a nation, live up to our great promise of freedom for all? In the year 1900, civil rights activist James Weldon Johnson and his brother James J. Roseman Johnson penned a soul-moving anthem, "Lift Every Voice and Sing," also known as the Black National Anthem. This tells our story, the story of the descendants of enslaved people here in America. When growing up in segregated Washington, D.C., during the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, we embraced Lift Every Voice and Sing as the Negro National Anthem. Black people of all ages stood and sang our anthem with great pride. After every invocation, at all important events, at church, at school commencements, the Negro National Anthem was sung by all. Tears continue to come to my eyes as I enter, well, I'm in my 90th year now, as I enter my 90th year of life when singing, "God of our weary years, God of our silent tears." This anthem is as relevant today as it was in 1900. Sadly, America, the fight for freedom continues for us. When do you become brave and live up to the great promise of freedom for all here in the land of our birth? That's the end of that piece. This is a short piece.
Well, thank you. Short, but quite potent. First of all, I want to know if anyone in the audience has any questions about it, if they want to have any comment on it, the board is full. But all you have to do is press the number one, and I will be able to allow you to get on the air to ask questions or have a comment. There were a couple of things that I've had so very interesting that's in your piece that I've had the opportunity to talk about it this week. Before we got on the air, I asked you how your week was, and you asked me how I was. And I've been in several meetings, and there are two words that are in your piece that you wrote in 2020 that apply to a bit of what I'm fighting in. And when I say that fighting, I really do mean that word, fighting for us in several organizations. One is the dilute.
Hello. Uh-oh. I lost it. Franz, did you get cut off?
Yeah, no, I'm not cut off, but she gets cut off.
Okay.
Stay there.
Because I really wanted to hear. I should hang up or... Okay.
Sylvia, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Good, okay.
Do you hear Lenny?
No, I can't hear Lenny. Fonz, you can mute me again because I'm in a corridor and sometimes the sound just comes through. Okay, Fonz?
Oh, Franz is not able to put you back on. He's going to call Lenny now.
Okay. So it's Lenny who has basically...
He's controlling. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
There you are.
Fantastic.
Hello.
Lenny.
Hi, I'm here. I wanted to hear what you were saying.
Yes. Okay. Hold on for 1 second, please. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all righty. Then we go. Let us go. I just want to make sure. I've got a feedback, and I don't know why. Is someone close to you still on the phone?
Well, Franz is in the room, in his room with his phone.
Oh, okay. I'm getting feedback. Did you hear the question that I had?
Yes,
no.
I heard. No, I didn't.
No. We haven't heard it, Lenny.
Okay. What I wanted to know is after you read what you said, what was your advice to the generation, probably three generations down now, as they are entering into their maturity, to try to bridge the gap that we have in our society about the inequities that we are still experiencing after all that time? And I ask you because of the different the experience and the maturity that you have. So, can you hear me?
I
can hear you.
Okay, Bill, you go. You want to answer that?
No, actually, she's asking you, Sylvia, in terms of your piece.
So I
that's
see.
What she's asking you. Go on.
Yeah.
So just talk, explain.
Yeah. I guess that it still goes on. I think what happens, and we have to continually be involved with the movement and making sure that we get legislators in that the vote goes on so we can get people in to change the laws, because voting has been one of the biggest problems ever since Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look
mm-hmm.
through the whole civil rights history, it's voter suppression. And that's one of the most important things that we have to deal with. And that's still going on. And today, our young people have to know our history and be aware of their responsibility to be involved with the political process.
We have tried so many different things. Demonstrations, some violence. We tried creating laws, peaceful activism. What would you say is the next move? Either one of you can answer that. What about you, Bill?
Oh, that's an extraordinary point, because as you just can you hear me, Lenny?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
That is an extraordinary question, Lenny, because it brings to the floor the how mendacious this society, the legal process, the picketing process, the writing process, to change what's going on right now. I hate to believe at this age, at this time, that the only other weapon we have to change things around is violence that we ourselves mm-hmm. initiate. I hate to think that way. But when we are hit over and over and over again by examples, they'll be brought forth in voting. So what do they do with voting? They took a voting machine and put it out in Timbuktu so that if you needed to vote, you had to rent a car, rent a bus, move, do whatever you needed to do to vote. Or they gerrymandered the way in which we vote for people. So they've even corrupted that process, which sometimes gives young people the air, well, why should I be bothered with it? Unfortunately, the necessity to stay up on the need for it is critical. As difficult as they'll make it for us, we've got to get past that difficulty. That's the importance. And yes, it is about voting, but yes, we need to stay current with it. So those are the things which come to my mind right now. And again, the other one I don't want to think about. The second one it necessitates continued attempts at having your voice brought forward through your vote.
Yes.
So,
you know,
that's it.
What if the thought process, and this is for both of you too, to answer too, is that for me, I've heard, not directly, but, you know, sometimes little blurb, that young people think that the process of equality has been achieved, that there's no problem. What do you say to those people who think that now? I think a lot of them thought it before George Floyd, but still some think that we are beyond that. What do you say to those young people who say that?
But it's obvious that we don't have equality. It's so obvious. And maybe people might be able to live in different neighborhoods, but it's still, you've got the de facto segregation all over. And it happens in all areas of life, unfortunately. And right now I see more of it than I've seen even before.
Well, you know, I do agree with you, but I think it's, and I don't call it brainwashing. I think it's the point of view where a lot of households, children have been raised in households where their point of view of what's going on, their reality of that has not necessarily been emphasized, that it has been purified a little bit. So as they grow up, they're a little bit more naive about what it is to be here in America, not only to be a black person in America, but when you're a white person in America, what that effect also is, and the privileges that are allowed you, and the fact acknowledging those things. I think that that has escaped a generation.
Yes, Winnie, I tell you, I would say you're absolutely correct at this point in time. Absolutely correct. And the need to reinforce the importance of self starts in the home.
Mm.
And then you move outside into the world, and you bring the understanding that you are somebody. You have an entitlement just like anyone else who's walking around. Mm-hmm. And you arm yourself, I'm saying, ethically, spiritually, and physically, because you will encounter adversity in every step you take. Now, one of the things which I don't want to necessarily bring forward, but it has to be said, is do I, in my appearance, represent the Most High?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. That's a big question to me. I'm sorry, say it again?
No, it's a valid question.
Yes. Do I, in my image, represent the Most High? And I say, absolutely. Though the Most High, which has been brought forward to me, doesn't look like me. And so I don't worry about that at this point. But I am, and I'm entitled to whatever I can do. Now, sadly, the outside of me, those around me, some of them don't agree with that, and there is a failure to communicate starting at that level.
Exactly.
So, you know, you continue to move, you continue to strive, and we must not let someone define who we are or write mm-hmm. our history, because we've been reading someone else's history.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
Well,
I think what we're doing tonight, it proves that we are not going to sit very carefully and allow someone to describe who we are or to record our history for us, that there is an element in of our population that's decided that we really must own our own history.
Absolutely. And Sylvia's piece, I think that it is critical to tease out everything she says, because she said so much in her piece. And every little bit has significance. And as I think you said, Lenny, a lot of people, or young people in particular, they don't understand, say, James Weldon Johnson and how he wrote that piece. Or whatever, but it is absolutely, it's a fantastic piece if you really listen to it. Anyway,
well, you know, all three verses are absolutely, most people just know, they hear the first verse, but if you know all three verses, it's amazing how the range of subjects that he covers in that song about the journey and the struggle of an enslaved people, you know. It's amazing.
And the hope of, and talking about the hope also.
Has always got to be persistent and everlasting. Because without hope, we have nothing.
That's true. But I also say about that hope word, I don't know if I brought it forward last week. Hope came out of, why was hope the last thing to come out of Pandora's box? I asked that question across the board. Anybody? It was the last item out of Pandora's box, and you need to think about that, because that's important. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Well, all right. We've explored that, those elements. Now, Bill, do you have a piece that you can for us?
I did indeed. I do have a piece here. For whatever reason, and I really can't put a finger on it, when you said we had to, not had to, but we'd like to, you'd like us to bring forth, this piece came to mind. Now, maybe because of what's been happening around us in terms of the shootings, in terms of the our youth being challenged in ways which they've never been challenged before, our youth being shot, stories about whether or not people are of value. Anyway, this is where this piece came from. It was written in January 2022. I'll start. It's entitled Long Past the Crying Time. Glancing out past the turmoil before me, I could see the approaching storm, the clouds dark and threatening, moving closer and closer. I wasn't present that day at the church picnic, here told in that beautiful wide open field. Grandma had premonitions and wouldn't let me go. She frequently had those. As an adolescent, I never understood. Of course, to me, she was just being a mean adult, not letting me do what I wanted to. But obviously, she was connected to the greater unknown source. And sure enough, something did happen that day. I'm in a hospital. I apologize for this.
May I have your attention, please? Security alert. Emergency room restricted access. Please do not enter.
I imagine he tried to run, young Singleton, away from that impending storm cloud to a place he believed would protect him, a tree where his older sister had taken cover. But he was wrong. When the other kids from the block returned, dazed and almost in shock, they reported that the lightning seemed to follow him before it struck him and lit him up. almost as if only him, anyone in close proximity, was knocked to the ground, as was his older sister. Hers was just a concussion, but baby brother, however, was gone. Not sure what brought me back to the thoughts of that day. Was it the rolling dark cloud seen before me on my trips into life's landscapes, remembering my dash, however, or the awe of it, knowing all too well its blessing and its curse? Things seem so fleeting these days. One moment you're here and the next gone. My thoughts are stuck sometimes between the proverbial rock and hard place, not knowing the whys and the wherefores, questioning planned and unplanned, and for that matter, whose plan. It has been decades since that day, and that memory still persists. And now before me, another moment, soon to be a memory. He was just walking away. I asked the rhetorical question, why did you shoot him? For I am frozen between horror and shock and know nothing else to do but ask. As I gaze upon him in the distorted sense of space, almost touching through the daze and shock, I hear, get back, get away, from the keeper of the gun. He is white, dressed in the uniform's finest. There is no question in my mind as to why he was shot, and there should not be in anyone else's. He was, is a black man, and they, we are fodder for the keepers of the gun. Almost like in an arcade where one is given a gun to shoot down the images before him and receive a prize for all those knocked down. In the minutes and moments of this horror, the storm had arrived, and it is thunderous, almost clapping out the grandness of a finality that all spirit souls deserve. The rain is pelting, almost painful. In the moments and seconds, I watch as his blood swirls on the ground with the rain as it moves away from his body, not certain of dead or alive, but down and not moving. He was or is somebody's child. She was pregnant with his life and with his potential, raised and loved and given all that was humanly possible. It is hard to imagine anything else, though surely there was, for we know what it is like in this day and time to bring a man-child forward. Was she blessed in other ways other than the blessing, joy, and magic of having a belly full of life? Was she loved, the before and after? Or was the spark momentary, out of a need to be touched, given long nights of loneliness? There is so much we will never know, as our assumptions, like bricks, sad, biased, sympathetic, angry, form a wall that distorts and blocks our ability to see the truth. What and whose? No matter, for it is the visible, dry tracks of tears which moves family, friends, and neighbors to say, we are here. Done.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, I asked the board if there are any questions, if there are anything that they want to say. As I listen to this, we, of course, are well into our hour, so we don't have a whole lot of time. But I wanted to ask you, Bill, that's beautiful. Both of these people are quite lovely and beautiful. So thank you, both of you.
You're welcome.
What I'd like to ask you is the two instances of loss of life, one that occurred so early in life and one that occurred more recently that might not have occurred right in front of your face, but did occur in an environment that you can record it. Were there similarities for you in how you felt?
Yes.
Given the different, in, you know, one was decades ago, one was more recently. What was the similarity? Mm-hmm.
The similarities that there were two lives basically gone with no explanation. One, I thought, was done by the powers that be in terms of the social system, and the other was done by a force unknown to us in saying, well, it's his time. The most recent one was real. I was 10 feet away as that man pulled his gun and shot him 3 times. And all I could do is surreal. It was surreal. That was the word to me, surreal. And I imagined if I was on that picnic, church picnic at that time, and I saw what happened to young Singleton, it would have been also surreal to me because we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know the extent of what is before us sometimes, and all we could do is either ask a question or just sit in wonderment and or awe, good or bad awe, but we sit and we're left pondering why. I don't know, Lenny. That is the closest similarity I know, and anytime there is loss of life, we ask the question. We ask the question, how, why, what is it? What is it at this point? That's where, you know, that's what generates for me in terms of when I see something which I cannot explain. I have to ask the question, what's going on? And I'll also just add, I like music, as Sylvia has pointed out for us. There was a piece which I thought was almost special in what it started to say. Marvin Gaye's "What's Going On." That was a fantastic piece for him to bring that to, and, you know, because it spoke to so much that was going on, and whoever wrote it, did Marvin write it? I don't know. Someone could probably tell me yes or no. But anyway, it was just a fantastic piece, and it always brings that to mind.
To be very frank, I don't know who wrote it, but we will research that. But there were so many things as you were speaking that were flying through my mind when you talked about the two instances, one where as a young child you imagined how it would be, and then as an adult you were right there. One of the thoughts that I have is that it's reported so many times that we as a nation are numb to the number of deaths, the number of killings, the number of serial killings that go on. But I think this is a perfect example that we are not. That every death is an important element in our lives. That we are desensitized. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. You are 100% correct. And that is a very sad state to be in. Okay?
Yeah.
I actually agree with you. We cannot let ourselves be turned off in a way like that. And I think even in some of the things which are done politically, you know, there's so much going on around us. We cannot say, I'm not going to deal with that. We have to maintain consciousness about it, because there is a force out there that suppresses our being. And, I could go on, but anyway, yes. Yes, Lenny.
No, you know, I just said not only suppresses it, it depends upon us getting discouraged so that they have more control when we're discouraged and walk away.
True that.
So to boil, we must be persistent.
Continuous.
Yes.
Continuous.
And have the staying power. And have the
That's
staying
right.
power, like we
yes.
hear in the Black National Anthem.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Having that staying power.
One of the things I'd like to bring forward is just about that persistence and continuous. We must be that, but we must not let that persistence and continuous eat us alive. My father had hypertension because he was always worried about being consistent and persistent, persistent. We must find a way to do exactly what we need to do, but not in a way that consumes us. And that's
yes.
where the creative thought comes through.
And that's a very difficult thing, not to be consumed. And we have to work with that and work with each other with that and help each other.
Absolutely. Mute me.
I that when we look at some of our pictures,
Let's see if I can hear you.
Yes.
No, mute. Yeah.
Okay. I want to wait till that announcement is done. Okay. When we
it's
look
fine.
At our historical figures and we see sometimes how they passed away very young from heart attacks or stroke, we realize the stress that is put on some of the people who are in the forefront of leadership politically. We all have to try to share some of that stress for them so they're not taking it on their shoulders.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Most of the people who have been in the forefront of activism have not lived to have very long lives. You know. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Indeed, it is. Yeah. And whether it is physical, mental, or spiritual, sometimes we get consumed. Those are meals which we eat. We eat spiritualism. We eat. We have mental thoughts which should be constructive and positive, and then we eat foods which don't serve us well. So yes, we are at risk across the board.
I have a text that has been given to me by my lovely Jeffrey Thomas that is an answer to your question, Bill, about hope. I'd like to read it now, if I may, and then we'll continue
okay,
this.
Mm-hmm. Lenny, you're breaking up. I don't know what it is, but you're breaking up as every fourth word or something.
Can you hear me now?
Absolutely clear.
Yeah, I hear an echo.
Yes. Yes, there is an echo. I don't know where it's coming from. It wasn't there earlier, but I tried to wait until the echo finishes before I go to my next sentence.
Good, Lenny. Good. Okay.
All right, let me read this. I think I can get through this. Because hope is the ultimate weapon to guard humanity against all evil and challenges that Pandora inadvertently released through her mythological curiosity, saving grace. Now, that was his reason why it was last.
Can you read it again, please?
Because hope is the ultimate weapon to guard humanity against all evil and challenges that Pandora inadvertently released through her mythological curiosity, saving grace.
Do you want me to comment to that?
I would love you to.
In the box of evils, that box is filled with action evils, evils that imply some kind of action. Now, hope came out. Now, this is my understanding, is that we have a choice to have hope and do something.
Along with action. Mm-hmm.
Or, that's right, or hope and sit still. Which one are we going to do? The one that sits still is just another evil. The one that does something, action, is a blessing. I would support that man in terms that he's speaking of hope as an action, as a doing something. That's my thought. But because it's in the box, she is bringing forth, or whoever she was, because I don't think Pandora was a real person to begin with anyway. Someone did that. They were speaking to the fact that so many people have it and do nothing with it.
And I guess that's the same as prayer, too, that we stay on our knees and we pray and we wait for God to come down and do it for us. But he expects us to act.
Stand up.
And to act.
Yeah.
You take that hope and you utilize it for good. You find a plan to work with, and that's where he helps us.
Absolutely.
As we work with the plans.
Yeah.
And I think that with young people, they need to pray, have hope, and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to prepare themselves and to live a life that they want to live.
I think that there is an adage that says, God helps those who help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good, Lenny. Very true. Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
You know, sometimes we also misinterpret the signs that God gives us. There is a story about the man who was drowning. And a boat came by, and the man said, and they said, let me help you. And he said, no, God is going to save me.
Exactly.
I don't need your help.
My favorite
and
story.
And I think he had three times that happened, and he ultimately drowned. And when he got to heaven, he asked God, why did you not help me? And God said, I sent you three boats.
Yes.
To be aware of what is being sent to us also.
Exactly.
May I give an example of something, Lenny? As a clinician, I had a patient who said to me, I'm not coming to treatment anymore because God's going to take care of me. God's going to give me a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't berate him. I didn't laugh at him because it was so serious in his mind that he knew that he was going to be blessed. And this is real now. This is not just a story. I got on the phone and called his preacher. And I said to the preacher, you told such and such that he did not need to come to treatment anymore. And because God is going to save him. Did you tell him that? And this treatment was critical. Don't do the treatment, you die. That preacher hung up on me, drove to the man's house, and brought him to treatment himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's real. Now, sometimes...
Yeah.
You know, go on, Lenny. Go on.
No. Go, William.
That is an example of a well-meaning understanding, but it's the past. You know, the path to hell is paved with good intention at this point. So the preacher knew what he wanted the man to understand, but unfortunately his message fell on a deaf ear. That's why he acted himself to bring the man, because the man
mm-hmm.
could have been the person that God sent. So,
exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly.
And God has no other hands but ours.
You know, I think what people don't realize, again, is that a lot of the treatments, a lot of the things, a lot of the resources that we have are sent for us to utilize, that those are the boats that we are given.
Absolutely.
That not necessarily is there a healing hand that's going to be put on us that heals everything instantaneously like a miracle,
mm-hmm.
but that there's a process. And
indeed.
We have to recognize the process
mm-hmm.
that does
indeed.
Exist in our own reality and may not be built on miracles. Well, with that said, and I thank everyone, because we've had a bit of technical echoing in this episode, for your patience for staying with us and listening to us. And we're going to continue this on another kind of device where I don't know if this will follow us, but just ending our conversation on both of these pieces on our webinar, and that can be, the link can be accessed on Facebook. And on air, I want to thank you, Ms. Sylvia, you, Ms. DeVille, for coming in and bringing such beautiful writing and messages.
Good.
To the audience and to
thank
myself.
That, yeah, thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, we will have Stephanie Gardner, who is a traveler of the world, and she will talk about me and my 33. And it's one of the last episodes of the season. I encourage you to tune in. But I thank you both for this. And I will see you on the webinar in a little while.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Good night, y'all.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Good night, and thank you for listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser.
Good.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night.